Several Issues Etc. regular guests are candidates for leadership positions in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Every LCMS congregation has received nomination forms for the president and vice presidents of the synod. Please encourage your pastor and congregational leaders to fill out and return these nomination forms before February 20th of 2019. Learn more at issuesetc.org/nominations. issuesetc.org/nominations.
This is my kind of town. Chicago is my kind of town. Chicago is.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We are going to be going through listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. Before we get to the email and the comment line on this Tuesday afternoon, we're going to begin with a major announcement. We have decided, finally, that having only one Issues Etc. conference in 2019 is a pretty good idea, but to do that, we need a larger venue for the conference. So we've decided that the upcoming venue for the summer Issues Etc. Making the Case conference is going to be in Chicago. Why don't you give us the details, Jeff? After all, this was your decision, ultimately.
Well, it was a group decision. I make very few edicts around
here. No, you
did.
It was not an edict, but you had the final say. Because you're the boss around here. We needed a bigger venue, and we were looking for someplace that was kind of neutral territory in terms of travel for people, and Chicago offered that best opportunity for us to have the June 2019 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
Yes, it's going to be Friday, June 7th, Saturday, June 8th at Concordia University, Chicago. And same format as always. It'll begin with a live remote broadcast of Issues Etc. at 3 in the afternoon on Friday, followed by a break for dinner. Two speakers, Ross Douthat of the New York Times. I know he's scheduled to speak Friday night. New York Times columnist. Don't know where everybody else is fitting. I know Pastor Matt Harrison, president of Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, will be speaking Saturday morning on June the 8th at Concordia University, Chicago. And we're really excited. And like you said, we need a bigger venue. And so we decided to just go a couple hours north.
We'll also have Wesley Smith, the Discovery Institute, as one of the speakers, Aaron Wolf of Chronicles Magazine, and Pastor Will Whedon and Pastor Hans Feeney. Whedon is kind of a perennial. He's only missed a couple of the conferences and usually is in charge of our hymn sing. And then Pastor Hans Feeney will be repeating from last year, if I'm not mistaken. We had him at the Collinsville conference as well. So we're covering the gamut with all of our speakers. We got a bigger venue. There are a few details to work out, but if you go to our website right now, you're going to see a pop-up ad where you can find out more about the conference, all the details you need to know, hotel information, the speaker lineup. We don't have the schedule yet, but that'll be up there soon enough. And you can also register. There's an early bird registration. It's $115, includes three meals over the course of the conference. And then I think by May, if I'm not mistaken, it'll go to the regular price of $125 per registrant. So you can register at our website, issuesetc.org. You'll see that pop up. Just click on that and you'll get all the information that you need. I'm excited, actually, about getting Ross Douthat to come out. He's been a guest on the program before. But, you know, when you talk about the New York Times, most people associate the New York Times with kind of the pillar of the progressive media, and he is a voice of reason. He is a voice that has a moral compass there, a kind of a outlier when it comes to columnists that are syndicated by the New York Times.
Yeah, I'm really excited to have him. Don't know what his topic's going to be on yet, but we do know that President Harrison will be speaking on making the case for Christian joy. Wesley Smith, the Discovery Institute, will be making the case for the Hippocratic Oath. And Aaron Wolf of Chronicles Magazine will be making the case for conservatism, both inside the church and outside the church.
It's going to be kind of different, actually, because we're going to be on the campus of Concordia University, Chicago. And that means not only a larger venue, but it's logistically going to be a little different. Up to this point, we've held our conferences at local congregations that were large enough to accommodate the crowd that the conference draws. This way, I don't think the size of the crowd is going to be as much of an issue as getting used to being someplace that isn't home territory. We have for years been going here locally to Collinsville, very welcoming congregation there at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, just down the road, literally down the road from where we're sitting right now. And when we decided that we would have but one conference rather than two, we very quickly realized that we couldn't accommodate that. It would be unfair to ask the folks at Good Shepherd, as great as they've been to us, to try and accommodate a crowd larger than they could. So this was the natural choice. There are also an awful lot of Lutherans in Chicago. Chicago is a pretty big place. Jeff has become familiar with Chicago lately. I think you spend almost every weekend up there. Were you there this last weekend for a birthday? Your daughter there, who's a student at CUC?
Yes, both the two oldest Schwarz children attend Concordia University Chicago. Justin's a sophomore. Emily's a freshman, and Emily's birthday was on February the 11th. So we made the journey to Chicago, and I proudly serve on the Board of Regents at Concordia University Chicago. So I do make quite a few trips to the Windy City.
By the way, speaking of birthdays, isn't it yours today?
Yes, it is.
That's you have passed a milestone, at least when it comes to AARP. I know that they start sending you stuff when you're 50 years old, but you are now 55 years old.
Yeah, Justin, our oldest, called this morning. Deaconess heard the conversation and joked, like, you get the discounts now at restaurants. 55 years old discount.
See, I think I always get asked if I get the senior discount, because I think I actually look quite a bit more senior than Jeff Schwarz does. Jeff still has his natural... Jeff, that is your natural hair color. I wouldn't want to lose complete respect for you to find out that at 55, you're keeping your dark hair color in some sort of artificial manner.
So far. No okay. Grecian formula? Is that what men use?
I don't know, because I haven't had that problem for about 10 years now. Due to the fact that I have so little hair, and the little that I have has went gray when I was about 35. So right about the time my daughter was a teenager, my hair went completely white.
That usually happens.
So when I go someplace, I was recently at a show and I was asked if I wanted the senior discount, which I always take, of course, even though technically I'm still 54 until May of this year. But I look quite a bit older than 54.
Oh, so I don't think so.
Yeah. My wife reminds me on a regular basis that I look quite a bit older than 54.
You know, we talked about this, I think, last week. I was thinking of posting a meme. Is that what they're called?
Yeah, that's what they're called, Jeff.
That's what they're called? Is that all the rage nowadays, memes?
That's what all the young people are doing.
How do you spell meme, by the way?
M-E-M-E.
M-E. There's not three M's. It's not M-E-M-M-E.
No, I don't
okay.
think so.
Okay. Anyway, I was thinking about posting one of those hipster memes, and it would read as follows. The older I get, the more I realize the wisdom of my high school educated parents.
Why do you want to post that, Jeff?
Because I've learned more from two people without an advanced degree at an institution of higher learning, more true wisdom than anything I did graduating cum laude from the University of Missouri Columbia School of Journalism.
They've been better teachers to you.
Wisdom.
So both of your parents went as far as high school and stopped there.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
My grandfather on my dad's side had an eighth grade education, which my dad often reminded me when I was growing up. An eighth grade education back in the early 20th century was the equivalent of probably a high school with some college stuck in. But he went all the farther he went was eighth grade. And then it was time to go to work. It was time to farm at that point. And that was considered a sufficient education at the time. I imagine your dad's high school was a fair bit better than his high school education probably held him in better stead than I know that my high school education. It was decent, but I was educated in high school during the time when they were using us like guinea pigs for all their what we now call progressive education. think Common Core before people had the sense to notice that they were experimenting on your school children with educational theories that were, in some cases, bogus. So we'd sit in English class, and instead of actually learning how the English language functions in terms of its syntax, its grammar, learning to describe the parts of a sentence and think clearly that way, they just put pencils in our hands with empty pages and just told us to write what we feel. And it was nonsense and poorly spelled too. Very poorly spelled.
That's not important.
But we were learning to express ourselves. We were learning to tap into our inner creativity. And I've often said that my entire education when it comes to my vocation, which is communicating in the English language, came after that in the School of Hard Knocks. So
back to the conference.
Yeah,
the early bird registration deadline is April Fool's Day.
April Fool's Day, April 1st.
April 1st.
So after that, like the price will go up for everybody. But we do encourage you to register early. We're anticipating, since there are so many Lutherans in the Chicagoland area, there'll be a lot of local people coming in as well. So that 500, we're putting it at 500 right now, will probably fill up pretty fast. Plus, in Chicago, getting housing and hotels, not an easy thing to do. So you might want to register early for that reason. We've set aside a couple blocks of rooms in hotels there near Chicago, but there are plenty of hotels there. And we will, within the next day or two, have dormitory options for anybody who wants to avail themselves of that less expensive, probably more convenient because you can walk right there option.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. I think it's like $40 for an individual person to stay in the brand new Concordia Hall that was built, I think, like a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago.
What's it like?
Oh, it's beautiful. And actually, if you get one of the dorm rooms facing Chicago on the third or fourth floor, you can actually see the Chicago skyline from the Concordia Hall.
Yeah, we should mention this is in River Forest, Illinois, which is a suburb, an older kind of, what would you call it? Hoity-toity? Is that a good way of putting it?
I would say classic.
Classic.
A classic. Oh, everything's brick. Everything is stone. It's got quite a bit of history with the mob being located in that.
Oh, really?
Part of Chicago. Yes.
Yeah, it's a safe neighborhood. It's where the bosses lived, exactly. Not where they did their business.
Right, exactly.
They went downtown.
They went downtown to
do their business,
people.
And then when they were done with their business, they went back to River Forest to their nice homes, their nice respectable suburban homes, and then they built Concordia. We used to call it Concordia River Forest. You're saying Concordia River Forest was built by mob bosses?
No, I'm just saying the town is.
Oh, the town.
The town has a history of mob bosses living there. And getting back to the dorm rooms, I think it's $60 per couple to stay in a dorm room per night. So that's a way to save some money as well.
If you go there now to our website and you look at the registration information, it will say dorm room information coming. It will be coming in the next couple of days. There's hotel information, some links to get to those hotels. And it's always a way to register very easily. If you have trouble registering online in any way, if you don't want to do it, just give Lynn a call, 618-223-8385. Ask for Lynn. She would be happy to register you for the Issues Etc. conference in Chicago coming up June 7th and 8th of this year. It is the only Issues Etc. Making the Case conference we will be holding in 2019. So register early. We'll be right back with listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line.
Chicago, Chicago, my hometown. Chicago, Chicago, that toddling town. Chicago, Chicago, I'll show you around. I love it.
Several Issues Etc. regular guests are candidates for leadership positions in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Every LCMS congregation has received nomination forms for the president and vice presidents of the synod. Please encourage your pastor and congregational leaders to fill out and return these nomination forms before February 20th of 2019. Learn more at issuesetc.org/nominations. issuesetc.org/nominations.
In the family of God, we never run out of people to love. This line from Robert Zagore's article, Who is My Neighbor?, cuts to the heart of the Lutheran Witness's February issue on mercy. Beginning with the earliest Christians and carrying the story forward to present-day mercy work in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, this issue will open eyes to Christ's great love for the Church and the Church's great love for a world in need. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Luther had Wartburg. We have Collinsville. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going through the listener email and the Issues Etc. listener comment line. That email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. And the comment line, 618-223-8382. You can email us anytime. You can go to the comment line anytime with your show suggestions, criticisms, questions. You want to get in on the conversation, especially our beloved on-demand listeners.
Let's begin with George in Raleigh, North Carolina. He's responding to your recent interview with Washington, D.C. journalist Mark Hemingway on President Trump's State of the Union address. George writes, Mr. Hemingway gave an interview showing in compelling fashion how, one, the Weekly Standard, his former employer, died, two, Christians can be and sometimes are mired in the swamp. Mr. Hemingway, and I guess yourself, should pause every now and then to reflect on Romans 13, Proverbs 21, etc., and the fact that your jobs are not to badmouth President Trump. Let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. Couple all this with the fact that President Trump has worked tirelessly to fulfill the requirements placed upon him by the U.S. Constitution. For example, he has stood fast for life by fighting for protections to the weakest among us, the unborn, disabled vets, Christians forced into performing actions in their vocations that are illegitimate, just to name a few. For example, robbed of their constitutional freedom of practicing their Christianity. He has done nothing but return freedoms to U.S. citizens, stolen by, as your excellent guest remarked the other day, the state in its attempts to usurp the moral and ethical authority of church and family, paraphrasing. A number of Hemingway's cynical, judgmental, and petty politicized descriptions of the president's actions, persona, and motivations were truly disgusting. I don't know how it ended. I could only listen to the first 10 minutes or so. Suggest you guys stick with Romans 13 and leave the Hemingway and his ilk to CNN and MSNBC, where he, and indeed, the Weekly Standard best fit in. He ends with a quote from 1 Peter 2:13, for this is the will of God, that by doing good, you should put to silence the ignorance of foolish people. Thanks for the feedback, George in North Carolina.
Well, a couple things to deal with. Submission to governing authorities does not mean that we don't criticize governing authorities. I'm certain that George would probably have found plenty of reason to criticize our former president, Barack Obama, and that if he did, that does not mean that he was failing to submit to governing authorities, or that he was even resisting those governing authorities. We had a great conversation with Dr. Scott Murray, where he pointed out that the word here, submit to governing authorities in Romans 13, does not mean obedience. It means submission. And that Paul even finds himself having to disobey. We must obey God rather than men, and the other apostles as well, having to disobey governing authorities while still submitting to them. They ended up suffering the consequences for their disobedience. But to criticize a sitting president is a fundamental American right, isn't it? To be able to criticize who our elected officials for what they've done or haven't done. But I would urge you, George, to go back and despite your disgust, listen to the entire interview, because I think that Mark Hemingway had a lot of very praiseworthy things to say about President Trump. You might not like what he's written elsewhere, but I think he had a lot of things positive to say about President Trump and criticism of those who find themselves at the other end of opposition from the president. So one of the things I really appreciate about Mark is that he is, when it comes to criticism, he is equal opportunity. He is willing to criticize the president when he believes the president needs criticism. He's willing to criticize the president's political opponents when he thinks that they need those criticisms. Part of what journalists do, especially journalists like Mark Hemingway, probably one of the politically best informed men I have ever met in my entire life. And I've met a lot of very politically well-informed men. I have nothing but respect for Mark. Even though he and I may disagree on certain issues politically, that's neither here nor there. I will speak to the issue of the Weekly Standard's demise. We don't know why the Weekly Standard went under. The most that I could discover was that its parent company decided to prioritize its funding elsewhere. And so it went down. I know that there are people who are saying, well, it went down because it was critical, or some of its authors were critical of President Trump. I think maybe even the president might have insinuated that himself. But that doesn't explain things like the New York Times, as critical of President Trump as any publication has been in the United States, posting record subscriptions in the last several years and expanding its subscription base exponentially. So if opposition to the president means that your publication is going to go under, and you cite examples like the Weekly Standard, you need to explain the New York Times, which is leading the opposition along with the Washington Post against the president. Both of them seem to be doing rather well. So why that particular publication went under, maybe a combination of things, and maybe its opposition to President Trump might have something to do with it. I don't know, but it's certainly not the only reasons. Those kind of things are complex, and simply being generally opposed to President Trump for certain reasons, not for every reason, but for certain reasons, can't account for all of it. That's a pretty simplistic way of looking at how those scenarios play themselves out. I would completely agree with George that the president has been the most pro-life president we have ever had. I don't know if he personally believes the agenda of defending the unborn that he has consistently pushed. I don't really care. I'm just glad that he's pushing it. We have had presidents who've had the personal conviction to defend the unborn who have done one-tenth as much as this president has done. I will say that he's had unprecedented opportunity that other presidents may not have had to do these things. He's also been given a gift on an almost daily basis lately because his political opponents have gone as extreme, or at least exposed their extremity on their unwillingness to protect the unborn like they never have before. So he's had a lot of opportunity to do that, and he's availed himself of that opportunity. He should be commended for it. And I think Mark Hemingway would be among the first to commend the president in his defense of the unborn.
Well, he did during your interview about his remarks about the unborn.
So go back and listen to it again. Sure.
One quick clarification or correction. You said Dr. Scott Murray on Romans 13. I think you meant Dr. Mike Middendorf on Romans 13.
Yes,
you're
right.
Author of the Concordia Commentary Series on Romans.
You're right.
You want to listen to a comment from the comment line?
Sure.
Hello, this is Steve from Unionville, Michigan. I had a comment about the recent broadcast on the topic of closed communion. In my limited experience, very few would explicitly disagree with anything that was discussed. However, anytime that practice is talked about, it is promoted, it's always with the caveat of, you know, allowing exceptions for pastoral discretion, or a similar term to that. However, I've never heard any serious discussions, or very few discussions, of what the limits are on that pastoral discretion. So if you haven't already discussed it in another episode, I would really be interested in your thoughts on when a pastor might legitimately make an exception and what the limits would be. Thanks.
That is a very, very good suggestion. I think we should include it next time we discuss closed communion. And because, yes, it is true that we always need to qualify what it is our teaching and practice is on closed communion, the boundary that Christ has drawn around his supper, his table, that boundary of fellowship. We need to say that there are times, and again, they are exceptions, where pastoral discretion may require a pastor to, I don't want to call it exceptions. I want to say a pastor has discretion on how he applies this biblical teaching of closed communion. But before you can discuss exceptions, you got to discuss the rule. Before you can make an exception, you have to be practicing the rule. Because if you're not practicing the rule and simply practicing the exception, you have made yourself a new rule. The only question really is closed communion biblical? In other words, is it the teaching of Christ and his apostles? And the answer to that question is yes. So this is what we have. This is what we have received from Christ and his apostles. We never make an exception to what they have taught or practiced. We do make exceptions when it comes to how that is applied in individual cases. That's up to the individual pastor, but he must be guided not by his unwillingness to live and act and teach according to what Scripture says. He needs to be guided by his willingness to be gentle and careful when he applies this. So let's just put the cards on the table. There are many pastors who ought to be practicing closed communion, but what they're doing is making the exception the rule. Under the banner of pastoral discretion, they have simply abandoned Scripture's teaching and practice of closed communion altogether, and everything now becomes an exception. If everything is an exception, you have made a new rule. One, I should point out quite clearly, that is contrary to God's word. But it's a great suggestion. We should bring it up next time we talk about it.
Quick comment from Laura. She said, I've signed up multiple times to the Issues Etc. journal, but haven't received it in years.
All right. The only way I can help you is to tell you, and I hate to tell you to go do it again, but if you go to our website, issuesetc.org, click that red button about subscription, enter your email address. Make sure you're entering it correctly, a valid email address. Then we do, all those email addresses are collected, and we do send out the Issues Etc. journal. What might be happening is it might be going into your spam folder. There might be something that's filtering it at your end. So I would encourage you, if you signed up many times, make sure your email address is correct. Check at your end whether or not it's going into your junk folder or your spam folder, because it's coming, this email is coming with an attachment, and the attachment's rather large. It's a link to what's actually coming with a link that is a link to the online journal. And if you spam filter sees that link and says something's wrong, it might just be getting funneled there. So check it out, and maybe you've been subscribed all along. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll resume our series on marriage and divorce with Pastor David Peterson. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
The Lord is our shepherd, and we are the people of his pasture. Why then do we still suffer in this life? Disease, loneliness, persecution.
I'm Katie Schuerman, and I'm collaborating with Cheryl Swope, Molly Hemingway, and a host of literary friends in He Restores My Soul, a book that takes an honest look at hardship and heartache in light of God's promises found in His Word. He Restores My Soul is now available at emmanuelpress.us, emmanuelpress.us.
Jesus the Good Shepherd says, "My sheep listen to my voice. I know them, and they follow me. I give them eternal life." We invite you to join us as we listen to the voice of the Good Shepherd and follow Him who gives us eternal life. Sunday worship services at 9 a.m., Sunday school and Bible class at 10:30, Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, Arnold, Missouri, on the web at goodshepherdarnold.org. That's goodshepherdarnold.org.